Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. Your Peugeot car or van might benefit from a free software upgrade. For more information and to find out if this applies to your vehicle, call the lads in Slattery's Garage, puck on 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.
Thanks, Ali. Welcome back to the final hour of Tip Today. 1800 938 007. A listener says, what a fantastic young man Jack is. Great musician and singer. Fair play to him and well done. He should be very proud of all he's achieved. Does he ever speak to secondary schools in Thurles? I'm not sure about that. I know he speaks in certain schools anyway, but I'll find out a bit more about that. Still getting lots of stuff in on the Robins. Look, I promise you, we will return to it because it's a fascinating subject. But right now, it's time for our Friday panel, and I'm delighted to be joined indeed by Phil Prendergast and Joel Leahy and Helen Walsh with us again. So good morning.
Good morning, Fran.
How are we all? The big story of the week, I suppose, again, immigration and the removal of almost 200 IPAs and asylum seekers from the area deemed tent city in Dublin. It's also a week of great friction between the Irish and UK governments, as we found out that the majority are coming here through the northern border, with that number expected to rise further along with the introduction of the Rwanda policy. But the Taoiseach has said no Gardaí will be sent to the border to control the influx. So what can be done, if anything, to stem the flow and not cause further damage in the relationship with our nearest neighbour? Phil, do you want that? First of all, it seems to go from week to week, one catastrophe to another.
Delighted you started with me this morning, Fran.
Hi, Phil.
Fran, what conflicts me about the border is the fact that no Gardaí can be sent, but is there a use for the army to go in there to have some sort of control? Because my overview of the whole thing was Rishi Sunak was very glib in what he said about we're not taking them back. Mm. We're not the gateway, but we are the gateway. Mm. And I think the conflict is that when you realise simply how many people are coming down that road and where are they to go? They are refugees, but like everything, and please don't take this the wrong way, but there's a lot of people that use an opportunity to be opportunistic and come to a country where their needs mightn't be as serious as others that need asylum. Mm. So I think it's very unclear when we say we're not sending Gardaí. I don't believe we have the Gardaí for that, actually. I just don't believe we have the personnel. And also I think it's you're probably sending people that may not be local to the area or whatever, and so they have to relocate or they have to travel or they have to leave home or leave their kids, leave their families. There's the issue on both sides. It's very sad, first of all, that requirement is there. People have to come into this country. But I honestly felt that the British reaction to it was, I thought it was quite
Jacob Rees-Mogg the other night. I mean, he made my skin.
Well, I'd bust that fella if I met him. Sorry, I mean, that man
he
is
was
strange,
so smug and awful about it all. But of course, there is then. I mean, we have the open border with the UK. We wanted to have that. And I'm not sure about policing that again and the signals that would give, Phil. You know?
It's not about policing it. I think it's about a control of an exploitation of a border that is unpoliced by a country that has a policy to send asylum seekers to Rwanda.
Yes.
And is it Rwanda or Ireland?
But we have a judicial decision now that UK might not be a safe country because of the possibility of sending some of the asylum seekers to Rwanda. So there's all sorts of extra complications going on top of
this.
Oh, there is.
And you see, the conflict is there, Fran, because we have been accepting of so many different nationalities as we have been accepted all over the world. And I can remember going to the UK after I qualified as a general nurse and I went off to do my midwifery. And before I went to get a place in midwifery, I went to work in a hospital in London as a staff nurse. And I can remember the smells, the different cultures. I was living in a nurse's home, and honest to God, I did not see a, and I don't mean this in the wrong way either, but I did not see a person who was the same colour as me for about 9 days.
Wow.
And I remember being quite frightened with that, because there was a lot of Chinese girls and there was a lot of Filipinos and there was a lot of black girls and there was a lot of different nationalities. But I was still very immature at that point because I wouldn't have had a lot of life experience coming from somewhere like Ballyragget and then going to Waterford to train as a nurse, you know.
But were you welcomed?
I couldn't say I was welcomed. I was very determined to go and start my midwifery training, and we were the first course to do an 18-month training. It had been a year up to then. So there was a lot of new stuff in it. But when I did start my midwifery training, I absolutely loved it. Became comfortable with all those people because they were lovely people like anyone is. And I saw beyond the different nationalities and I saw beyond
that. Colour and colour and all of that as well. In terms of security, Joanne, with your experience, I mean, that notion again of putting Gardaí back on the border, I mean, that would, those of us of a certain age, that would take us back to a time that we don't want to really revisit.
What do you mean a certain age?
I'm a bit touchy this morning, really.
We're all getting very touchy.
When you look at the border, Fran, you know, it's a bit of a phenomenon, really and truly. Like, patrolling, you know, I was up there, you know, patrolling the border, like, really and truly. It's like, you know, securing a draw line from here, we'll just say, to Dundrum.
Yeah.
And say you can't go north or south to that. Just only in the imagination, really, and truly, because it's totally impossible, really, to do it. The only place that you can do these things efficiently, if you want to do them, are the airports and the ports, because that's where people come in, really and truly. That's what you can do. But you see, I suppose, you know, I've often said this old kind of a statement, you know, to every, you know, problem, there's a solution. But every solution brings another problem. And here we are with the open border. We want the open border for trade and we want the open border for this and we have the Good Friday Agreement and all that. And now we're faced with this thing. And I do agree with you with the smugness of that, you know, that individual, you know, if you could call him that, you know, for what he said. And it's not so much what he said, it's how he said it. And it really is like we're a kind of an old dump over there, you know, we're the powerful nation over here. We can do what we like, we can fight whatever we like. But I think we have a bigger issue here. And the issue that I'd be really concerned about here is the extremism that's taken place. You know, we're looking here, you know, everyone is defining this far right and far left, but it really is extremism. And I think what we should do now, you know, as soon as possible, I honestly believe we should form, you know, an all-party committee to address this situation and get views and say, right, we can't just take the money and the grants from the EU and not take the other bit with it. You have to take the rough and the smooth. That's the way the country is. We've gained a hell of a lot from the EU. You know, you're talking about money coming in. You're talking about roads. You're talking about buildings. You're talking about, you know, during COVID. Agree or disagree with vaccinations and all that. But you're talking about all these grants that we got. And now we have to take this on the back of it because the EU have signed up to it. But we're not going to get anywhere. And we haven't got anywhere in the past number of months by fighting with each other and amongst each other. And we're at nothing. And scoring political pints off each other is getting us nowhere. And it's leading to more extremism on either side. And it's only a matter of time, unfortunately, before somebody will lose their life because of this. And it will happen because it's getting worse and worse and worse. There's meetings and meetings and meetings taking places now in places where there's no refugees at all for fear they might come in. You know, and I believe that, you know, it is time that we took a leap of faith and formed an all-party committee and none, you know, all parties and none, and say, let's deal with this, get this together and look at it positively. There is way, way too much negativity about all this from everybody.
Well, how do you put a positive spin, Joe, on the absolute fact that we don't have enough accommodation and there was at least 100 poor devils last night that were told, sorry, we can't do anything for you, go and find some place to sleep around Dublin?
But it's not, I don't think, I'm not saying, Fran, maybe to put a positive spin, what I'm saying is deal with, come to a conclusion, come to an agreement.
Whatever that might be.
That agreement is, hold on, we can't take in another 100, we can only take in 42, then come to an agreement on that and deal with it. We are going to, it wasn't there yesterday that you knew that, like, look, this is all very simple if you base it down. If you have a few visitors to your house tonight, 3 or 4, you'll cope with them. If you have 40, now you're in a bit of a predicament. If you're 400, now you're, you know, fairly swamped. And this applies to the same country. We have only so much accommodation. Whatever way we look at this, we can only accommodate so many.
Mm. But we still haven't accepted that, Joe.
But we have to, Fran.
I know that we
and,
have.
And my point is, if we had an all party, you know, committee that would stop picking at each other and stop scoring points off each other and say, right, we have an issue, sort it, and come to a conclusion together.
Listen. Okay. All right, Helen, what are you making of this?
I was watching the news last night, reading various articles, and I was thinking, well, first of all, just, you know, bouncing off what Phil and Joe said, that we have so many asylum seekers coming in here. They're also flooding in across the border from, well, not the non-border, from Northern Ireland. And our country is bursting at the seams and cannot accommodate them. And it makes sense to say enough is enough, that we have to wait until we can accommodate those people who are here. And to think of these poor, now, some of them are genuine, coming here, looking for asylum, and to be told, we can't do anything for you, here's a tent. And that is inhumane.
Hmm. And last night, they didn't even get a tent.
No,
and
then they were
given some addresses, but yeah.
Which are moved off Mount Street, barricades put up so because they tried to get back. Hmm. Then they, a group of them went up to Balls Bridge and camped there.
Yeah.
And they were told, well, okay, overnight, but you have to move in the morning. And then there were others who got accommodation in homeless shelters for asylum seekers. The spillover were told to try and get accommodation in homeless shelters for, we'll say, Irish people. And those services are completely under strain as well. So who do they choose? You know, it is just crazy. Piling on top of that.
And when they tell you, Helen, that, you know, whether they point to the Geneva Convention or whether they point to obligations from Europe itself, when they tell you that that's there and we have to adhere to that, what do you say to that?
I'd say, which do we then adhere to? International obligations or national obligations? It seems to me that our government is completely ignoring national obligations.
So what would you do right now then, knowing where we are right now and the difficulty of accommodating people, what would you do now?
I would say that we say enough asylum seekers until we can look after those we have. Process the people.
Stop
it, because it's crazy. They're just pouring in, landing on the streets. Some may be sent back, but yet again, it's a case of not many. And they, after a certain point, then it's not even known where these poor souls are going to. So it's inhumane. It's also inhumane to the asylum seekers. It's also inhumane to the Irish homeless. And I really think we need to say enough is enough for now until we can cope with what we have. And I think our government also needs to address and put as much energy as they are putting into the asylum seekers, they need to put it into the Irish homeless as well, to see equality. I find the government guilty of inciting hatred.
Wow, that's a big statement.
I was really boiling last night watching what was happening to these poor guys and women on Mount Street, being sent away like that.
Mm. And in the case of Newtown Mount Kennedy, and it's important for listeners to know this as well, it's just tents down there as well. So really it's going to be a case of, well, get them out of where they're going to be very visible and put them somewhere else. But it is tents that they're going to down there in Newtown. It's not as if that there's modular housing down there.
It's what they did in Dublin and Patrick's Day, get rid of them so they can't be seen by the cameras, out of sight, out of mind. It's the same thought process as we see in overcrowded hospitals like in Limerick, where they move the trolleys away so that the minister wouldn't see the trolleys. And yet again, I might be shot for this, but hey, you know me. I think that any staff members who participate in the movement of those trolleys are also culpable of allowing this problem to continue.
But they're under instruction, you see, Helen, in fairness to them.
When you look at all this, you see, and I can see Helen's point, but how do you physically stop people from coming in? You know what I mean? How do you, like, these people are coming in, you know, ABC and different roads, different means, different, you know. How do we actually say stop? The only thing, the only way we can say stop really is to deal, and I can see Helen's point, and I agree with it now to a favourite. We have to deal with what we have at the minute.
Mm.
But we're not going to progress this at all by spending hours and hours, and you say one thing and I say another, and someone else says another, and Phil says something and Helen says something different. And we're all at it. This isn't going to solve the problem.
Yes.
The only way we'll solve the problem is to sit down and say, right, let's deal with this now in a practical way and stop, pause for a while, deal with what we have. And, you know, I do know, like, right from, you know, history will tell you, dealing, like, with the homeless in Ireland, it's a lot more difficult. Homeless is a very, it's a massive conundrum, and a lot of people don't want to live in houses. A lot
and,
of people yeah, are
and Alice Lee, he explained that to us one day, the complexity of that, that it's not just as simple as housing somebody.
It's not.
With
it's
certain
not.
Aspects of
with
homelessness.
Certain, and as well yeah. as that, I would see people like, we'll say, for example, like people in prison, say for 8 or 10 years, they bloom well don't want to leave.
Yeah.
Because they're institutionalised inside in the place.
Of course.
And they really are, and that's what life is about.
And what are you making, though, now of the government coming out, Phil, and saying, oh, we want any vacant properties that are out there. We want you to sell them or lease them or loan them.
But you see, Fran, in every village and town in Ireland, there are community halls. They might be used for perhaps 2 to 3% in a week. Now, some of them can have much more use than that. But we do have shelter that we could give as emergency setups. We have charities, and we have Vincent de Paul, and we have all of the other charities that are there to help people, and it's genuine. So people could get bedding, or they could get, say, a sleeping bag, and they could get some degree of comfort. They would have access access to toilets. I do think the whole Mount Street situation, where people were defecating and urinating on the road in public view, is such awful for them to have. No facilities.
It's inhuman.
Absolutely.
But if you go down that line of community halls and stuff like that, that's all fine and very well. But what about the schools and the doctors and all of the other services that you need to go along with that, Phil?
Yeah, but all you can do is react to what is a crisis. And if the crisis is that you can give somebody shelter, the rest will fall in. Look, Fran, you see, I think we're expecting a first world service from a country that isn't even first world right now, because we have so many demands on our services already that all you can do is try to be humane when you're giving somebody shelter. So, I mean, why give somebody a tent or a sleeping bag and expect them all to go down and sleep under the main guard, which is grand, by the way, but it's not ideal.
Okay.
But it is used as
But now you're into a situation. What village do you choose to take their community hall? And if so, are they going to like that?
Listen, Fran, nobody is going to like what has to be done for an emergency situation. But, like, there has to be some degree of control where you can say, we are full. We are full. Yeah. We can't take...
And do you think we're full?
I do, Fran, yeah.
All right, OK.
And the other thing that needs to be done too as well, Fran, I said it a couple of weeks ago, people need communication, and that's why I believe that it's time for an all-party get-together. But people need to communicate, and they need to do this. Like, when you look back, we'll say, if you take an example of what happened during COVID, just an example of this. I remember, like, when I was on the town council, and Phil would be the same, you know, there was no way you could put a table and chairs outside a pub. God forbid that would not be allowed to happen. Forget about it. The next thing, this thing called COVID arrived. All of a sudden, there was tables and chairs outside pubs, and they're still there. And not a bother in the wide earthly world. So I don't see any reason in the world why negotiations can't take place in an emergency.
And not that long ago, Joe, we were all told that modular housing was not the answer to homelessness, and sure, it wouldn't work out, and, you know, the homes weren't good enough. And now, all of a sudden, modular housing is a partial answer to
absolutely.
It.
So my point is, why can't we get together? Why can't people say, right, instead of the doctor's surgery closing, I hope that I don't have to go to the doctor today now after this, but instead of the doctor's surgery closing, we'll say at 5:30 in the evening, that they can't open until 8 o'clock. But that can only be got if people get together and say, we want to solve this problem. But what's happening at the moment is that everybody is blaming everybody else, and the government, the statutory powers, everyone is wrong. But we can't be wrong if we're trying to help people.
Yes.
And there's one technical point that Phil said there, like, in a crisis. How long are we in the crisis now? It is now high time that we said, come on, let's deal with this, roll up the sleeves and deal with it.
You know, on that, Fran, I was just thinking that we're supposed to be one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Now, you can't eat GDPR. You can't use it to pay your bills. So why is our wealth of our country not being used for our services, to improve our services, to improve our accommodation, and to lessen...
Well, where the services are concerned, I don't think it's just about money where the services are concerned, because an awful lot of money is thrown at health, for example. Yeah. A lot of it is down to management and down to decision-making and that. Would you agree?
I would agree. I was recently, well, in the last... within an 8-month period, I was up the hill, up the hospital. Now, I got wonderful treatment. I could not fault it. The nurses were wonderful. The care staff were wonderful. But there were a good number of people running around with clipboards.
Okay.
And here they were under a lot of stress and trying to do their work. And if somebody is out, they won't be on maternity leave, they won't be replaced. And this stuff still
managed to deliver. Can I say you were nodding and looking a little wry smile on your face with that, Phil?
Because it's true what Helen is saying. There's so... I can remember, you see, back, Fran, when say, our local hospital was a sort of a small, contained hospital that had the medical, male and female, and maternity and paediatric wards. And life was simple because everybody knew everyone. You go into the hospital now, and honest to God, it's like going into Fort Knox. You have to go to this door, that door, this door. You have to put up a thing, wave at something, be on a screen, have a pass, have a QR reader. You just cannot go places now in the hospital. You need genuinely to follow the red line. Someone's colourblind and they've gone off to the mortuary accidentally. But it's a different ball game now. There are so many layers within the HSE that was supposed to solve problems. In fact, it has contributed hugely because people are very job centred, because it's not my job. You will be told very frequently, well, that's not my job. You'll have to go and speak to that person. That person has to assess you first. The triage nurse is going to try and see where you need to go most urgently. There are people, as we know, dying in corridors while waiting to be assessed. And the whole idea of triage in a system is that you identify that somebody cardiac, get them in, get them processed, get them assessed. You need to do it very, very in a timely manner. And most of the time that works quite well. It's when it doesn't, when we have the Limerick situation.
Of course,
and we hear about that. It's just...
And then you hear this morning the latest ICRA report saying that this is just beyond the beyond at this point, you know. And we can look forward to other issues like that little girl, Aoife Johnson, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, and looking forward is it's such a term. It's like you expect that we're almost going to become immune to the horrors of what it must be like to sit with a sick young person and know that they are failing in front of your eyes because they belong to you. You know that they are really, really, they're going. It's horrendous to think that we can nearly expect that or have an expectation.
So that's where we're setting the bar.
It's a really, really bad thing to do, to forget that when systems are failing, you have to say to yourself, why are they failing?
Well, that's what Joe was saying as well about the immigration issue. Why aren't groups of people sitting down and saying, hold on, let's apply some common sense to this. Let's speak to people like Phil and people who have been on the ground, know what the story is and get advice.
Do you know where I think it is? I think when there's always a conundrum like that, the solution is follow the money. Somebody is doing well out of the various major misfortunes and issues in this country.
And out of the failure.
Out of the failure. Yeah, and out of the opportunism, they are doing very well. Follow the money is always the solution.
What do you think of that, Joe?
Well, you see, you can't contradict any of it, really and truly, because, and again, you know, I've said it more than once here, we're back to the system. You know, who wants to fix the system? The people in the system don't want to fix the system because they're getting paid and it rolls on and that's where they're at and that's the truth. And when I say they don't want to, there's a few that want to. But in the main, people don't. The system promotes other people, promotes like-minded people up along, you know. And when you see, like, if you just look at it, say, for example, you know, we go back there to a simple thing that happened, we'll say, like, right, say about abuse to guards and abuse, we'll say, to the statutory powers and abuse to all that. Like, why wouldn't they be abused? Like when you see a guard who gave a loan of a bike to a fella and he's suspended for 4 years.
I know.
Sure, that encourages you to say, sure, hold on a second now. If you look at me sideways, there's a camera in your face and I'll tell you your job is going to be on the line and that's the end of that. Like, we're not dealing with any of these things in the correct way at all.
All right. Let me take a break. We'll be back to our panel in just a moment.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call Tip Today on 1-800-938-007.
And you're welcome back to our Friday panel. It's lovely the way during the breaks we sort out all the problems of the world during the breaks here. Phil Prendergast is with me, Joe Leahy and Helen Walsh as well. The Fine Gael Environment spokesperson, Richard Bruton, he has criticised Ireland's dependence on cars, saying the country does not need 3 million vehicles that are idle 98% of the time. Now, the former Minister for the Environment was speaking during a meeting of the Oireachtas Committee on Environment and Climate Change, the long-time Double Bay North TD. He had out at current over-reliance on cars, saying that this was a symptom of excessive use. And he called for new transportation options, like greater vehicle sharing. So, is he right? Helen, what about this? Because, in fairness, I always thought that Richard Bruton was a kind of a voice of sanity in the government. But what are you making of this?
I think he's talking I'd say he's backside. Let's go for it. Because he was saying that 98% of the times they're lying
idle. Yes.
So I'm thinking, what's the problem? So, if they're lying idle, they're not increasing any carbon footprint, they're not burning any fuel, you're going to have road tax paid on them anyway. So, and there's insurance, so what's the problem with them? He's also Dublin Bay North. So there's going to be a great transport system there.
Mm.
Whereas down in rural Ireland, and we are rural Ireland, outside the pale, shall we say, there isn't a great transport system. So it's all very well and good for him to talk about people maybe using fewer cars or whatever, but it's not possible down here.
Mm.
Now, I walk whenever I can. I'd walk into town and maybe get a lift back out, but I minimise my use of the car. But if I'm going down to New Ross to see my grandson, trying to get buses down there, I'd be all day just getting down and I can forget about getting back. So we don't have a good transport system. So he really doesn't have a clue. And I kept coming back to the 98% lying idle. So what is
I'm not sure
issue?
Where he gets that data from, because it's not...
But it's a weird thing to throw in when he's talking about over-reliance on cars. If we have an over-reliance on cars and 98% are lying idle...
Yeah, it's a good point.
He's saying one thing and he's saying the other.
Yeah.
So
I'd love a choice in the morning when I come out the gate of Kilpatrick and, will I take public transport today now or will I drive the car? I don't have that option, I wish I had, but I don't.
And instead, if I have a hospital appointment down in Waterford...
Yeah.
Now, I had one recently. I had to cancel it because I was actually going, because it was for my eyes, I couldn't drive back. So I was going to get the bus down and back. Yet again, I would have been all day long doing it because there aren't enough services down. So, and then even trying to get to Dublin from Clonmel, trying to get there by train.
And the times are all
the times are crazy.
You probably know Richard Bruton, do you?
I do, yeah.
Yeah,
I do.
I mean, and he is a decent man. He's a clever fella, isn't he?
Yeah, Where did this come from? Yeah, I would always have a good old regard for him. Now, in fairness, I thought he was kind of fairly level-headed, middle of the road. I don't know where this come from. I would honestly, if you just let me say this much first, I would totally agree with him. In the context of go down and getting a loan of 40 grand and buying a car and leaving it apart and you're only using it for an hour a day, you'd be saying to yourself, geez, that's an awful waste of money. In that context. In the context of using a car, the name of God, we have to use cars. There is no way in the world can we not use cars. And if you have children or grandchildren or whatever else, you have to have two cars in the house because you have to go here, you have to go there. There isn't a hope in hell that can work in... I'd say he's talking about 98%. I would say, 98% of Ireland, that's a non-runner because it cannot work. wherever you go to. And on top of that, people as well are leading very, very busy lives. You can't, you're not going to come along like and wait for an hour and a half for the next train home or the next bus down. That's not suiting people at all.
Yeah,
like,
because Helen was saying that you'd have to spend the whole day travelling.
Correct. Yeah. And I do know people like who are, as you'd say, Fran, of an age. And I know people who are of an age and maybe they'll take Tuesday off and they'll hop on the bus and they'll go to Kilkenny this week and then they'll go to Waterford next week and they'll have the tea and the coffee and they'll come back all for free. That's happy.
Charlie Haughey's free travel.
That's all happy days and more luck to them. Enjoy the, you know, yourself happy days. But the reality of it, for most people, you're out there, you're working, rearing a family, you know, making a living, paying the mortgage, paying your way. You need a car, and in an awful lot of cases, you need two cars.
Mm. What do you feel about this, Phil?
Well, I suppose I can't add much to what's already been contributed, but I will say that in relation to people that have free travel, I have heard of many, many cases where women that I actually personally know who've gotten on a bus and gone to Limerick or Galway, heated, comfort, get off the bus, have a cup of coffee, get another bus back or go further on, or will I stay overnight somewhere because it's a good deal or whatever. And people are really living their best lives and enjoying, I suppose, the fruits of their labours, if you like, having gotten to the age.
But I presume you see nothing wrong with that.
I don't see one thing wrong with it. They are comfortable, they have heat, they have a toilet on the bus even. It's like, what's not to love about that? You could bring your picnic with you and go to the seaside and come back. And there's great freedom in that. Coming back to the real life where you have young parents with young children, maybe in different schools, maybe not on a bus route or maybe not qualifying to get a bus or whatever. It does mean that there is an awful lot of perhaps unnecessary travel, but I think most people make the best use of it. Mm. I have to say here, the town bus system that's now here is absolutely, without question, one of the best initiatives Clonmel has had for such a long time. And there are so many people that are so delighted to be able to leave their cars at home and at might in time change their minds about, do I actually need a car? Can I get a bus to where I need to go?
Yes, and but you see, if the choice is there, I'm sure a lot of people would make that choice. Because as Joe said, 40 grand for a half-decent car.
Like, yeah, I mean, and if it's you sitting have a choice, there and you're paying your tax and you're paying your insurance and you're paying your maintenance.
But you were saying about that hour a day, but that hour a day could be vital because it's the one that gets you to work.
Well, that is, you see, and I think where your last point there, Fran, about that, you know, and Phil, about the town bus and all that, that is where I think an awful lot of people will get rid of the second car.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and they'll say, we'll manage with a one.
Well, there's an option.
There's an option.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you wouldn't even consider that if you didn't have the facility of the town bus.
Yes.
But the thing
enough for discussion.
I'd go back to again is I can remember there was no such thing as a school bus in our village because the school was within walking distance. But the distance to our school where I lived in North Kilkenny was the same as the distance from, say, Marlefield down to the presentation.
Wow, so it was considered.
So it wasn't
a walk,
it wasn't considered a walk then. It was considered that you just got out the gate and off you went. You did not didn't think about it. Because it was there wasn't a car.
That was the norm.
It was the complete norm.
But there is no way that, like, Fran, people like that are working out there. You know, I know you look at all different aspects of society. Like, if you're working there, we'll say, like, as, you know, in, say, refrigeration or something in your service and stuff, and you have a van, you have all your equipment and your tools in it. You know, the same as if you're doing, say, televisions or something, you have all your equipment. That's one service van. You have to go travel on the road. But if you're going about your business, if you're just, say, take it, an auctioneer, and you're going out showing houses and whatever else, and you're based here in Clonmel, you're showing houses in Kilsheel and Care, what do? You can't get buses or transport or anything like that. And the majority of people, this is factual, like, you know, if you're, say, a teacher, you know, do you finish up at 3:30 in the day and do you get your bus home with you? That's not practical at all. Those things are not, they're not a runner at all. They don't, just won't work.
All right, let us move on to Eurovision because Bambi Thug will represent Ireland in the first of two Eurovision semi-finals, which takes place next Tuesday. Now, Eurovision often seems a bit of a joke. It never seems to escape being a political bandwagon, though. And this time it's the conflict in Gaza with calls for Ireland to boycott the contest over Israel's participation. But it does raise the question, why can't we just enjoy something, and even if it is to poke a bit of fun at it, without making it political? Joe, what do you think of that? Eurovision, Israel, should they be banned? Because, of course, Russia was.
No, Fran, number one, I won't be watching it. Number two, I don't know who Bambi Tugger, I heard him, and I certainly won't be looking at him. I won't be looking him up. I won't be sitting up looking at him either. The truth of the matter is, I think, the balance is right. It's an event for a certain section of society. I think it should go ahead, and I think we should be able to have a smile and a joke. We should be able to separate the two. If we protest against everything in life, we'll end up doing nothing. And that's the truth, because we will always find an excuse to object to something. Like if you take, look, there's a hurling match on tomorrow evening between Tip and Waterford. Oh my God, they shouldn't be using these sticks on a field. Oh my God, they shouldn't be. We'll find out, there shouldn't be a crowd of people gathering. There shouldn't be a bus. There shouldn't be this. We'll find a bucket of excuses for everything if we keep at this. Let this Eurovision take place. Let it go on. And the very best of luck. And I honestly hope we don't win it.
Sorry, I was with you up until then. Why do you hope?
Because it costs us a fortune to run the next one next year or the year after. Right.
Very good indeed. Helen, what about you? Eurovision, do you care?
I don't watch it anymore because it turned into an absolute bucket of crap. Really,
I was wondering what you were going to say there.
I was wondering where that was going to end as well, and I thought, better be careful. I might just get my mic cut. But no, I haven't watched it in years, because when it became more of a complete, I'll call it a showpiece, and being outrageous, and the musicality of it seemed to diminish, I've lost interest in it. Mm. But with regards to this, I think that overall, the Eurovision should not be politicised.
Mm.
But Russia was banned in 2022.
Yes.
Therefore, just out of fairness, Israel should be banned because of the genocide in Gaza. Just if they're going to do it for one, then do it for the other. But I also get that if we're going to get overly, and I am not denigrating or putting down the terrible genocide in Gaza when I say this, but we need to be a bit careful too about how correct we become in what we're doing. And there is just so much controversy around the Eurovision and about Bambi Tug. Gee whiz, they're getting the most awful bashing.
Well, that's for sure. And this is a young artist
who is also being dashed because they will not boycott the Eurovision.
Yes, I'm just glad you got the pronoun right. I thought I'd have to correct Joe earlier on there, but what do you make of it, Phil?
Well, I mean, I would agree with what our two colleagues have said there, Fran. I think it's an entertainment show. We're overthinking it. The Eastern Bloc voting system has certainly had an impact on our ability to win, but then again, if there's a truly good musicality to something and it's delivered nicely and it's not crackers and it's able to get the interest of people,
do you think that could still win?
They could still win, yes. Yeah. I think sometimes when you just hear a song and you think, yeah, I could do with that. This whole thing of dividing up the Eurovision to exclude countries from it, it's a sad reality, but it's also the fact that now there's so much more countries entering and they have good songs and they have good things, but there is a lot of crackness about it, they'll carry on in the stage and the lighting and all the rest of it. Sure, why couldn't they just come out with now a light bulb and sing under it and be good?
When I saw your man starting an angle grinder as part of his performance, I said, no, I don't think this is for me anymore.
Fran, I think we're just old now. And
but when we can send to Turkey.
It's a certain age again, isn't it?
When we can send to Turkey to Europe,
It always goes back to that.
Christian,
Before we go, talk to me about superstitions, because we started, Leanne started this with me on May 1st and it really grew legs, so to speak. Joe, are you superstitious? I mean, you go along with...
I could glibly say no, I'm not, but I am, really and truly. I certainly believe in Robbins big time. Hugely.
Do you?
Yeah.
And is that because of personal experience?
Just personal experience. Yeah, I would notice little things, like if I'm going down now, say to the oncologist, this is absolute, I'm telling you the truth here. And that morning, I just the night before, I'll see a robin bopping around. I'll say, we're okay.
I get a robin into my kitchen several times a day.
Yeah.
Comes in, flies in one window or door and flies out to the blinds on the other side. Comes in, goes to the dog's food, takes a little bit, stays around the floor, goes up on the shelf, has looks, flies over to the back of the couch and then just flies out again.
What are you seeing in that besides a cheeky robin?
I just think I've always liked robins,
yeah,
and I think
too.
It's a comfort. It's something I just think it's a lovely thing that a bird, or more than one bird, and now I know the other robin that comes has to be a baby, because otherwise there'd be savage fights inside and there'd be hair and feathers and all sorts of other nasty stuff
around
my house.
Among robins themselves?
Yeah, robins fight.
What
robins fight with each other, yeah, unless they're related. So the robins that come into me now, there wouldn't be a row with the ones, but then again, we wouldn't be known as a fighting household. Now, if there were cocks coming in, it'd be a different thing,
Helen, what about you and superstitions, in general, not just the robins?
Just quickly with the robins,
because sure.
I have a story about the robins too. My parents died within 8, I'm laughing at Phil here, my parents died within 8 months of each other, and when my sister and I were clearing out their house, there were just some paintings left on the wall. Now, one painting had been done by my father's sister, Mary. And as we were standing there in the sitting room, two robins, and as Phil said, they must have been related, both flew in and landed on that painting. And I was standing there going, wow. And I could just feel the presence of my parents.
You see?
Now, we had a hell of a time getting them out. I didn't call them nice little robins then. Lots of words that I can't say in air. But I was gentle at first because I thought my parents are coming to say, you've done a good job, you know, this is the last of it. And the fact is, they landed on my aunt's painting, a painting they didn't like. I mean, she said, oh my God. You know, if you wanted to scare away the mice, this would have been it. And I can say it because the poor lady now has since departed. So,
right.
But there is one superstition that always fascinated me, and it was, don't cast a clout till May is out. And I used to wonder exactly what's that. And a clout is, there's a word in Scotland, clouty pudding, which is a pudding cooked in a cloth.
Okay.
So clout is closing. So it means don't change out of your winter clothing until May is gone, or you'll die. Oh, I love these superstitions. I usually end up with, or you'll die.
Or you'll die, yeah.
Or you'll die.
I know, yeah. Somebody, I was saying this morning, we have robins coming in, and then Mags came on and said, oh, that's definitely a premonition that you're going to die. So I said, or somebody's going to die. So I said, thanks very much for cheering me up.
That's a great way to start the weekend.
Other than the robins, Joe.
Oh, yeah, I said, you know, the black cat, I believe in a black cat, and I do that kind
do
of thing. Yeah, and I wouldn't walk under a ladder. Now, maybe, you know, why wouldn't I walk under a ladder, you know? But I'd also as well, on a more frivolous note, I'd also too as well, take very much note, like, you know, when you're coming out of a town, if somebody flashes the lights at you, you know, there's a reason to slow down as well, you know.
That's another indication.
That's another indication, yeah. Not too superstitious, but it's another indication, yeah.
Are we losing these pishogues and these... some people might see it as nonsense, Helen. I don't know. Are we?
I think we probably are. And it's a shame because they're very much part of our heritage.
Yeah.
And it would be a pity to see them gone. As for the black cat, Joe better not come up to my house because we have a black cat called Julius Caesar and he's a big guy. So he might be a little bit...
Is he a panther?
Well, he is actually.
You'd want to be careful. You know what happened to Caesar.
He weighs over a stone and he's about 3 foot long. He's a lot of cats. But, yeah, I'll tell you. But, yeah, I... do believe, just like our fables, our pishogues, we need to hold on to them because our heritage is just being eroded, and it is mostly being eroded because of TV, the internet. So many young kids are even going around and they're speaking with this posh accent, you know, and it's Peppa fucking pig. Pardon the language, but that, I mean, like, oh my God. I'd love her just to jump into a puddle and keep going, you know. But I can even hear it in my grandson.
Do you think we're losing everything that defines us or did define us in some way? Is that what you mean?
Because you hear the kids speaking like that. Even my grandson was talking about King Kong.
Yes.
King Kong. And going,
I think the facility of communication is eroding, you know, through a lot of things, like through, you know, Zoom calls, through, you know, okay, you talk on Zoom calls, but people don't meet, do you know what I mean? People don't sit down, and how many times have we said it, thousands of times, you sit down in the restaurant and you're not sitting on the seat when the mobile phone is out and you're checking, and you know, you see these couple, it goes on. So the art of communication, so with that, the stories are going to erode, and so are the, you know, the pishogery, and that's going to go too, you know?
And it was a whole generation, like I can remember the Friends generation in that decade, and the young people then all had these American accents. You couldn't tell where they're from before you say that person is from Mullen of that or...
But is that not inevitable, really? And I'm thinking of traditional music here, where there were the very localised styles, and then, of course, you had, you know, television and radio and all of that, and it all became homogenised in some way, and you don't have as much local... Is that not inevitable, Phil? Is that just...
It might be inevitable, but I think that we have a certain je ne sais quoi, where we had an identity with, say, the Clancy brothers, and they might have had the old leprechaun suits and all the rest, and you'd be mortal looking at them. But sure, it was a branding.
They didn't have leprechaun suits. They had sweaters.
Well, they had one of them thing, one of them. But
never let the truth interfere with a great story.
Interfere with a great story, Was it Foster and Allen, was it?
Yeah, I
knew it was one of them. But, like, they had a branding and an identity, and they delivered excellent music.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'd be looking at them and think, oh my God, I'm just so mortified that they go out like that. But sure, do you know what? You weren't wearing it, so it's fine. Yeah.
But it was us, though, wasn't it?
It was us. But there's a lot of our stuff really being, I suppose, neutralised.
Yes.
Because people... I didn't know anything about Blessings and all of this on May, or if I did,
I
forgot.
Did you not?
No, right. I didn't.
Blessing the land.
No, if I did, I forgot.
All right. Well, there we'll leave it. And thanks very much indeed to Helen and to Phil and to Joe. Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks very much. Leanne produced. Stephen's on the way with the Time Tunnel. And I will talk to you on Tuesday. Have a lovely bank holiday weekend. But do look after yourselves, won't you? Bye-bye.
Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, poke on. You can't beat experience. With over 50 years maintaining Peugeot cars and vans, we like to call ourselves the experts. Call Slattery's Garage for a free vehicle health check today. 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.